You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com, follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, preview day. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing so well, Mike. I am so ready for new football. It's not even funny. It's been such a tape grind for me for the past couple of weeks, getting ready for the Senior Bowl and everything. I am very prepared for football that happens, and I'm not breaking it down. I don't know what the result is going to be. I'm so excited for these games to start, man.
Absolutely. And we've had a couple of preview shows. Go back and listen to those throughout the week. We had Aaron Freeman, Eric Robinson. Those were fantastic fun. Let's kick this preview off, Ben. We have got a lot of nerdy stuff to get to. We'll start with the Philadelphia offense against the Atlanta defense, as is customary here on Locked On Eagles. We will start by taking a look at the Pro Football Focus offensive line versus defensive line matchup chart. PFF has it really even, plus 3% in the pass game, negative 1% in the ground game for the Eagles. And the Falcons had eight games in the first 12 where they gave up over 100 rushing yards. Then you see that they had a four-game stretch leading to the playoffs where they only gave up 50, 84, 86, and 87 yards respectively. Two of those games came against the Saints. Leading up to their first game, the Saints had eight straight games of 100 yards on the ground. So this is a defense that is capable of taking it away and forcing you into some long down and distance situations. Let's remember that the Eagles are on a two-game stretch of under 100 yards, only had 108 against the Giants run defense, so it has had its struggles since the threat of Carson Wentz has left them. Ben, you alluded to it already. Against this fast defense, you got to be able to punish them with north-south running concepts. And like you said yesterday on our show with Eric Robinson from The Falcoholic, we got to find the hot hand from this group of running backs early, and we got to stick with it because otherwise this offense isn't going to survive these third down and seven plus yard situations. To really illustrate that point, from the season opener to the Rams game on third and seven or longer, the Eagles converted 34% of those third and seven plus situations into first downs to keep the drive moving. Since then, 17%. That's cut in half. Foles himself has converted 3 of 16 when Peterson has put it in his hands to keep the drive alive. You keep yourself out of that situation by getting positive yardage on first down. And a stat to illustrate that point, and I went down a whole rabbit hole, man. The Eagles rank 2nd in first down yards per carry average with 4.72 and also have converted the highest number of first down runs at 18.6%. The problem, again, is the disparity in what we have become accustomed to and what is reality after Wentz has been out. In the last 3 weeks, the Eagles ranked 31st in first down yards per carry at a miserable 2.11 yards. And one more thing. No, it's not. It's bad. It's real bad. One more thing to make this even worse, Ben, as if it wasn't bad enough. Remember when I said the Eagles were the 2nd in the league for first down yards per carry? The number one team in the league in first down yards per carry, the New Orleans Saints, ran 28 times on first down against the Atlanta Falcons in their two games. And wouldn't you know, they averaged an abysmal 2.71 yards per carry. 10 of those 28 runs went for 0 or negative yards. 7 out of those 10 tackles were made by non-defensive linemen, 3 of them by safety Keanu Neal. This Falcons defense gets downhill, is what I'm trying to say. The Eagles have to find a way to lighten the box and clear up some lanes. Ben, I knew there was going to be some disparity between the offensive production from situation A to situation B, but when I started going down this rabbit hole that I just revealed to you, I got to tell you, man, it's a concern. But I will say there is a silver lining, and that is, you know that the Eagles coaching staff is well aware of what needs to be fixed and have had an extra week to fix it. Either way, Ben, what are your thoughts on this information?
Whenever I see something like this, which obviously, you know, breaking it down took a hot second, but whenever I see, you know, you get into a stat that really just surprises you with the massive change, I always go to injury reports and I try to figure out if there was something that led to surprising lack of production or surprising shift in production. And for the, you know, you brought up the Atlanta Falcons being able to stop the Saints from running the ball on first down, really holding down the on the run over the past 4 weeks, two of which were against the Saints. You go into those games against Atlanta for the Saints and you discover a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
That first one, that was a, I believe it was a Thursday night game, color rush, great uniforms, Saints in the all whites, beautiful uniforms. And Alvin Kamara goes out in the first quarter with a concussion.
Right.
Starting guard Andres Pete is already out. His backup goes out with a concussion in that game. That's what's his name?
Simeo
Calamede. Yeah, something like that, right? And so you had, you know, a significant – that's a two-headed monster that lost not only one of its heads, but lost two of its guards as well, the guy who – and the starter and then his backup as well. So you're deep into the third string at that point. Then you go to the second game that Atlanta had against the Saints, and the Saints were just recovering – from all of those injuries. They had Larry Warford was limited, Andres Pete was limited. So they had all of their interior linemen who were playing, but they were playing pretty gimped up. The Saints have really been beat up over the past couple weeks, which is something to look at for Minnesota and New Orleans. Well, you go to Philadelphia's running game after Carson Wentz, and it's kind of a bit of a similar story in the sense that Steven Wisniewski is beat up with the left ankle. Obviously, Halabulivati Vaitai has been in for Jason Peters the entire second half of the season, I should say. And that's going to lead to a significant decrease not only in pass protection but in rushing game efficiency as well. These teams are getting beat up. To me, looking at this narrative, I definitely think that the Falcons defense has shored up the gaps in the running game over the past few weeks. I think Philadelphia has absolutely struggled to run the football without the threat of Carson Wentz. Those are true, but I don't think the disparity is as big as we think it is, simply because there were so many injuries. Now, that goes to say, you gotta hope that Steven Wisniewski, who's been practicing in full, is at 100% for this upcoming week. Because if he's not, then you're in big trouble. But so when I hear those stats, that's where I go. I go to the injury reports, I try to check that out. I think that makes it a little bit more understandable, but certainly it does stand out. Philadelphia needs to be effective on early downs, man. How many times has Carson Wentz bailed us out on a 3rd and 12, right? Just an absurd distance where he's converted. That's the biggest delta for me. That's the biggest gap between Carson and Nick Foles, the ability to convert on 3rd and 5+, 3rd and 8+, right? And so they desperately need to stay ahead of the sticks against Atlanta for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I was definitely concerned when I looked at that, and we'll move on from that. We'll go to some of the pass blocking issues here and some of the matchup. From a pass protection standpoint, looking along the edges specifically, on the left side, you've got Lane Johnson against Vic Beasley and also Tack McKinley. Lane ranks 3rd in Pro Football Focus's pass blocking efficiency rating among tackles. Beasley had a breakout year last year with 15.5 sacks. He's down to 5 sacks this year, including a 7-game stretch without a sack that he snapped in week 17. Tack has been the more effective rusher on that side with 6 sacks in his rookie campaign. He's also a switch hitter. He'll get used on the left and the right side. He's equally effective from both. So he's going to see some of Halepulivati Vaitai when he spells Adrian Claiborne. Big V, of course, ranking 47th out of 55 among tackles in pass blocking efficiency, surrendering 9 sacks and 39 pressures on the season. You'll remember Claiborne, Locked On Eagles listeners, from the Dallas fiasco where he had 6 sacks on Byron Bell and Chaz Green. Oh. Which
was that
was glorious.
A fun pod, man. That was a great pod that we got to do right after that game. That was a good time.
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff on that one. Ben, from a protection standpoint, how do you see the Eagles providing help to Big V? Do you think he'll need it? And do you think it's going to hinder what they can do offensively, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it should be more of the same, which is what we've... The main thing that we've seen is the excellence of Doug Peterson and his understanding of how to align his wide receivers, how to align his tight ends, so that simply schematically you help out Big V. Do you remember the big debate over Jack Conklin in his rookie year, right tackle out of Tennessee? Are you familiar with this?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Pro Football Focus, but somebody was attempting to chart how much help tackles received, offensive tackles. And the Titans had Delanie Walker, their tight end, lined up, not in line, not with his hand down, but you know, on 2 feet, in about as tight of a slot as you've ever seen, right?
Condensed,
it's like the split between the split between the guard and the tackle are about the same as the split between the tackle and essentially a wide receiver. Again, he wasn't like a tight end lined up with his hand in the dirt, but he was right there in that spot. Delanie Walker's presence in that spot either forces the defensive end, the rusher, to line up farther inside than he would like, and thus you limit your ability to get to the edge around Conklin.
Right.
B, you force him to line up way, way, way to the outside, which gives Conklin plenty of time to get into his pass set, and also just lengthens the pass for the path for the rusher to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Or third, he stays in the same spot, but now he's got to go through another dude to get to the dude that he's trying to go through in the first place, right? Mm. You have helped your right tackle even if Delanie Walker does not do anything towards that end whatsoever, right? And we've seen Doug Peterson do this on constant occasions, consistently moving tight ends over to the left-hand side, even if they're not involved with the play, even if they're not involved with helping Big B, constantly see running backs releasing to the left-hand side. You line up a running back on the right side of the quarterback in the shotgun, you run the RPO, you run the play-action fake, he naturally leaks over to the left, and now there's a body there, there's somebody in the way. The path isn't clean, right? All this disrupts edge rushers just enough, right? All we want to do is cause a little bit more problems. Helping a tackle doesn't need to be a big production. It really doesn't. And it hasn't been for Philadelphia. I don't anticipate that it will continue to be so. I mean, dude, when was the last time we talked about Big V being a liability? It's been a few weeks.
Yeah.
He's still, like, you know, been himself. He's still been, like, you know, up and down. He's made his mistakes. Obviously, there have been bigger storylines to deal with as well. But Philadelphia has done a fine job running their offensive line with Big V in place. I anticipate that stays the same against Atlanta.
Yeah. One of the things that I saw in the Dallas Cowboys game specifically, there was a third down where they had Zach Ertz chip on Big V's side, and he kind of like slipped up and whatever, and it was like all like the route combination just went to crap from there, and it really does limit what you can do. And people will criticize Peterson if he isn't chipping the whole time and Big V gives up some pressures, but like you said, it's not always about chipping. You can have condensed sets. You can affect the arc of the pass rusher as well. So those are great points. We covered some passing matchups yesterday with Eric Robinson. Go back and listen to that Thursday show. It was a fun one. Just to recap the predicted matchups, Alshon Jeffrey up against Robert Alford. Torrey Smith will see a lot of Desmond Trufant. Nelson Aguilar gets nickel Brian Poole. And Zach Ertz will get a combination of Deion Jones and Keanu Neal, among others. Quick reminder, go to iTunes or wherever you're getting us. Give us 5 stars. That's the only type of star rating that we accept here on Locked On Eagles.
We now have 70 total ratings and 67 5 stars, which we once had. Yeah, we once had 69 total.
Yeah.
And now we have 70 and 67. So really, two of you work together, have to go give us 5-star reviews, please, and thank you.
I love it. And if you do that on iTunes and you leave your Twitter handle in the review, we will enter you to win a free PFF Edge subscription, which is worth $40. Flipping to the defensive side of the ball, starting with the line play, Pro Football Focus has Atlanta at plus 15% in the run game. A little bit surprising there. Negative 16% protecting Matt Ryan. Left tackle Jake Matthews ranks 33 out of 55 qualifying tackles in pass blocking efficiency. He will see a mixture of Derek Barnett and Vinnie Curry. Right tackle Ryan Schrader will have his hands full with Chris Long and Brandon Graham, but he's held up extremely well this season, only surrendering 3 sacks and 17 pressures on the year. He actually ranks 4th right behind Lane Johnson. As mentioned before, the Falcons have 8 games where running backs Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman have combined for over 200 yards. We will see a heavy dose of wide zone, some power sprinkled in, maybe some 2 tight end sets. Good news on that front is that Eagles linebacker Danelle Ellerbe has returned to practice with limited participation, but he is still listed as questionable with that hamstring injury. Ben, pass rush, run defense, pick your poison. What do the Eagles need to do to accentuate either of these aspects of their defense?
So, firstly, I think he's going to play. If he's not going to play, I don't want to think about that reality, so I think he's going to play. Obviously, Philadelphia needs him in there. He's been crucial as far as the veteran addition goes. I'm going to pass rush because it was a topic brought up. It's been discussed this week. I feel like every week when the Eagles get a new opponent, their opponent discovers this and touts this, and we never really talk about this, so here we go. The Eagles have a very low sack rate comparatively. It's like in the 20s or something. It's not great. Atlanta's is significantly higher. Now, as we alluded to, Atlanta's number is markedly inflated by the Dallas game. All right, that was an that was an aberration. But they're a good team. They have good edge rushers, we talked about. They can produce sacks. That's the reality. Philadelphia's low sack numbers is 100% undoubtedly a product of the quick release of teams against Philadelphia. Philadelphia, especially in the beginning of the season, when Ronald Darby was out, man, I mean, it was a very clear formula. This team has bad corners and a very good pass rush. What do you do against a team with bad corners and good pass rush? You chuck the ball as quickly as you can, right? Yeah. This is not rocket science. Philadelphia's sack numbers are significantly deflated by the injury to Ronald Darby, number one. And number two, even when the Philadelphia defense is at full health, it still is a lot easier for teams to quickly get rid of the ball, understanding the effect of the pass rush. You do not see, like, you know, you really have to watch other games that don't involve Philadelphia to really get a better feel for this. teams do not stay in the pocket against the Philadelphia pass rush. They simply don't. You drop back, you hit your spot, you go to your first read, you go to your second read, and by that time, you're probably either escaping or you're under pressure, right? You got to be leaving or something like that. It is very, very difficult for teams to sit back there and hang out and go through full field reads and pass down the field. It does not happen consistently against the Eagles. Think about, like, the Eagles, there was that narrative in the middle of the season where they were giving up a lot of explosive plays. A lot of them were just half field or one route concepts. Think about Sluggo. Think about Mills. It was five-step drop. I'm reading a vertical read down the field. If I like my deep shot, I take it. If I don't, I'm throwing to the intermediate. Boom, yeah. That's it. It wasn't these like long developing, you know, up and out sort of crazy nonsense scrimmage. This wasn't happening, yeah. Right? Philadelphia gave up a lot of explosive plays, but depth of target wasn't what was bad. It was yak. It was, yeah. It was the ability to hit a receiver in stride, in space, and the corners couldn't catch up. So we don't, the Philadelphia pass rush is disruptive almost titularly, by name only. It will cause problems for Atlanta, at least from a game planning perspective. Now, all this being said, what we do need out of the pass rush for the rest of the playoffs, starting on Saturday, is good production. We need good production, we need presence, we need disruption, right? They can't vanish. There have been games over Jim Schwartz's tenure, more often, in my opinion, in 2016 than in 2017, where this pass rush has vanished. Where the second team was used too much in big spots, so on and so forth. So pass rush is the name of the game for me. Move Matt Ryan out of his spot. He likes to be in the pocket. He likes to stay on tempo. You got to be able to throw him off. But when you hear this whole, you know, the Eagles don't generate sacks, the pass rush is overrated, I really don't like that narrative. I think it's a little bit too close-minded.
Yeah, I agree. And you would really need to see the time to throw on some of these quarterbacks against us to really get a good feel for that. We get tons of pressures, man. What is that?
No, it just sounded super like yo, we get tons of pressures. Yeah, like very like braggy. I liked it.
No, it was a very humble brag. We're the most humble pressuring team in the NFL. No one's more humble than us about our pressures.
Yeah, absolutely. When I think about Jim Schwartz and the Philadelphia fan base, I think about humble, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So looking at the matchups between the Eagles defensive backs against the Falcons passing game threats, Pro Football Focus has it as such. Julio Jones will see Ronald Darby, and it will be interesting to see what the Eagles do when Jones plays from the slot, which he does on a fourth of his snaps. Taylor Gabriel will go up against Jalen Mills. Going to go with advantage Mills on that one, but Mills has to stay disciplined, stay over top of Gabriel, because Gabriel will get vertical on you in a hurry. I did a summer evaluation on Gabriel. I just dropped it on LockedOnEagles.com. Oh, go check that out. Slot man Mohamed Sanu has got an interesting matchup with Patrick Robinson, and tight end Austin Hooper will see a good deal of safety Malcolm Jenkins. Ben, I think Matt Ryan's season has been a little bit underrated due to the low number of touchdowns comparative to last year's boon. What do you think about him? What matchup stands out to you? Do you see the Eagles trying anything different with their coverages to try and neutralize some of the Atlanta pass catchers?
It's tough to say, to be honest. I think if there's a big question mark coming into this game, it's going to be how the coverage shells are deployed.
Right.
Because they have not been deployed very well, and there have been issues coming into the end of the season, right? Like, that was the biggest problem on defense, at least. Obviously, the biggest problem overall is Carson Wentz is out. But it's a big issue for Philadelphia on the defensive side is the discipline that you're seeing from these corners, the amount of help they're getting, and then also their mental priority, kind of their checklist. You know, these corners aren't unaware that they have deep responsibility, but they're clearly being either encouraged to or allowed to play very downhill despite the fact that they have deep third responsibility when they're playing these cover three sort of looks. And that's what leaves you susceptible to sluggos. Is that still going to be the teaching? Are they going to, you know, put them in cover three but ask them to play more, you know, more conservatively? If that's the case, I get worried, because you don't want to tell players to play against their nature. You want them to be able to make their own plays, and if they make mistakes, that's the nature of humanity. That's the way that works.
Yeah.
Obviously, something that we've touted a lot on this podcast is trying to move to more of a two-high shell, having the opportunity to get at least, you know, Corey Graham and Rodney McLeod back there, if not Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod, if you want to move Jenkins up into the slot, covering tight ends. I think because Austin Hooper doesn't scare me too much, you know, he's a solid dude as far as the tight end for the Falcons, but because he doesn't worry me too much, I'd like to see Jenkins in the back end more. He's a good back end player. He is. We do not see him often 10, 15 yards back unless his man took him there when he's in man coverage. And so we'll see. That's my biggest question mark going in, is what I really should say. I'm very interested to see what Schwartz does as far as deploying his coverage. Potentially tracking Julio Jones is something that's worthy of consideration. They need to do Something. Right? They need to do something different. We'll put it to you that way. Again, if it were I, it's more too high coverage. It's working with a lighter box, assuming Dellaby is healthier, and asking your front seven, listen, we need you guys to be able to stop the run in neutral situations. When I say neutral situation, seven gaps on offense, seven defenders in the box. Six of you got to fill gaps. One of you got to make a tackle. Yeah. Right? Boom. You know, you're moving Malcolm Jenkins down in the box. You're playing single high. You're giving yourself plus numbers in the box. Very difficult to run on, but now you're leaving your corners on an island. So for me, it'd be more too high. That isn't necessarily going to be the best solution. I trust Jim Schwartz to come up with it, but I'd like to see I'd like to see them do something different. That's my big question coming in.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, too, because we saw this little chess match that we played with the Giants where, okay, you're going to run the slant, we're going to run some bracket coverage. Okay, you're going to buzz the hook zone underneath the slant, we're going to run slant flat, we're going to run bubble flat, we're going to run swing flat, we're going to do all these different things, go flat, streak flat, all that stuff to get that defender to vacate that area, which will be interesting to see if that's kind of how this game evolves as well. Ben, anything else you want to touch on specifically before we finalize our predictions here?
You know what, Mike? We're 18 weeks into the season and we have not spoken about it once. We do these previews, Eagles offense, Falcons defense, so on and so forth.
Special teams, son.
Special teams. Yeah, we set it together. Look at us. Such good hosts. Special teams, man.
They win games.
Absolutely. And if you're in a poor weather situation, like Philadelphia could potentially be in, again, as our producers told us, we might be seeing some rain. We might be seeing some inclement weather there on Saturday. You have Jake Elliott, rookie kicker, playoff situations, a guy who has great leg, but is not the most consistent, accurate guy I'd ever say. And it pains me to say that because obviously biggest Jake Elliott fan in the world over here. Donnie Jones, a little bit older. You know, I don't think he's been playing up to his level. And the Eagles have a new long snapper for the first time. Darren Sproles is not returning. The special teams unit is not what it was. Very small margins in the playoffs, even smaller than the regular season. Let's hope that the special teams unit can come up with something good. You know, it hasn't been the game-changing unit it's been in years past. Dave Phipp, obviously still a great coach, but it's dealt with injuries, dealt with some turnover. We'll see what they're able to do.
Yeah, and Matt Bryant is ageless and made some very clutch kicks. The guy doesn't miss, man. Like,
and to be a Philadelphia, Matt Bryant.
Oh, dude, I was there live when he was playing for Tampa Bay, and Bruce Gronkowski was the quarterback. And with 33 seconds to go, we throw a screen pass to Brian Westbrook. He takes it to the house to get the lead. And then I think it was like a 61 or 62 yarder that Matt Bryant kicked to win that game. Almost got in a fight. Like, it was bad, man. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, the guy, he was an Arena League kicker before that. Nobody knew who he was up until that point. And then he just cemented his name right there.
The producers are pulling it up. It was in 2006.
Yep.
That this kick was, and that the reason I pulled this up is because that's one of my like earliest like firm Eagles memories. Like I've got the Super Bowl against the Patriots is definitely one. I've got the NFC Championship game against the Panthers a little bit, like kind of, but I definitely remember this one. I was 9, maybe 8
McNabb puked at this one too. I saw it happen live.
Matt, why he always puking during big games, McNabb? Unbelievable.
In Florida, he can't deal with the heat.
Hopeless. All right, those are darker times. We're on a new thing. It's 2017. Win for Wentz. Here we go. Wait, it's 2018. 2018. Win for Wentz. Here we go.
Yeah, what was the yardage on that kick?
62 yards.
62. Okay, so it was 62. Yeah. Freaking amazing for an Arena League kicker that nobody freaking knew. That blew my mind. I'm like, are they only kicking it because Bruce Gronkowski doesn't have the arm to throw to the end zone? That was my thought process. I'm like, there's no way this guy makes this kick.
Let's remember that Jake Elliott weighs less in pounds than the number of feet. Than the kick that he made. He's like 156.
Yeah.
And what? His kick was like 183. So Jake Elliott, man. What a come from behind story. Little man wins out. David beats Goliath.
Ben, tell the gentle listeners about the new storefront that Locked On Eagles has. And get us out of here, brother.
Oh, what's up, gentle listeners? Thank you so much for joining us on what could potentially be, but will not be, the last pre-game show of the 2017-2018 Locked On Eagles podcast. A terrible reality that may occur, but it's unlikely. As you know, I'm picking the Eagles to win, and so they'll be just fine. I've been Ben Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's been Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. Yeah, we got a store, people. TeePublic is hosting it for us. If you go TeePublic and you search Locked On Eagles, all one word, you'll find our user and you'll find our store logo on all sorts of stuff. Maybe new things coming in. You can get a onesie. You can get a mug. We're getting a onesie for AK, right, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I just ordered mine last night, brother, of course.
Perfect stuff. Anyway, all that merch is fantastic. More designs coming in. We're very excited about the store. Of course, looking forward to next week. two possibilities. One is the usual kind of pre-game, post-game situation. You know, the schedule will be doing it every week for the entire season. The other will be, you know, unfortunately putting a bow on things for the season and turning our eyes to the offseason. Obviously, 2 weeks from now, Mike and I both down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. So regardless of what's going on in the playoffs, we'll have a ton of draft takes for you there. Whatever you do, make sure you're always listening. Rate, review, and subscribe on whatever app you listen to your podcast. We're excited to go through the rest of the postseason with you.
Hey, some quick draft stuff. I just got a notification from Jeff Lloyd, the guy from Locked On Browns, good friend of the show, good guy. I saw Chris Burke talking about Auden Tate earlier, and Chris Burke does work for The Athletic for the Detroit Lions, and he was asking Jeff, like, you know, sell me why Auden Tate shouldn't be like a big time prospect for me, like really high on my draft board. And Jeff's like, well, I can't. I was like, I don't even know if he's day two. So Burke was like,
Michael,
go on. So this is what I said about Auden Tate. There's physical upside, but he's about as raw as they come. Should have stayed in my opinion, but never going to judge a player for coming out. Question his separation quickness, and he was good at the catch point, but didn't dominate as expected. Not sold on his AA being a plus trait. Guess who just liked that tweet?
Auden Tate.
Sure did.
Auden Tate's going to murder you in your sleep. And he should, not raw, bad separation ability. Auden Tate is a nuanced big. I love Auden Tate. We're going to fight about this at some point.
No, I think he's a mess as a route runner, to be honest with you. I think he could have used another year.
You're a mess
year.
As a route runner, Michael.
You're a mess as a
yeah,
person.
Okay, he absolutely could have used another year. No redshirt sophomore comes out.
So why could he use another year? Is it because he's raw? Because he's not technically sound?
Because every 21-year-old route runner could develop. I had Juju Smith-Schuster with a second round grade. One of the main reasons being that he was not polished as a route runner. He goes to Pittsburgh. They ask him to run 5 different routes. He doesn't do it great, but then he just trucks over people when he got the ball.
Bro, it's Pittsburgh. Everybody's going to develop there. You can find a fit for Pittsburgh for any wide receiver that comes out as long as they don't get like the dropsies or some mental thing where they just don't know
yeah,
how to wide receiver
anymore. Tell that to
Martavis
Bryant.
Well, yeah, he smokes a lot of weed. I'm telling you, it's not all on the field. It's more off-field stuff for them. Limus Swede had a broken wrist, got the dropsies, couldn't catch the ball anymore. That wasn't the Steelers' fault.
I can't believe you're using Limus Swede as a comp right now. Limus Swede has not played in this century, has he?
I'm not saying a comp. I'm saying Steelers wide receivers that have failed.
I'm just saying, like, as an example of Steelers wide receivers. He's like 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, okay, Ben just said that Auden Tate is Limus Swede, so Auden Tate, you can go ahead and like that while you're creeping Twitter searching for your name.
I'm going to start tweeting excellent stuff about Auden Tate to pick up these likes, man.
You know he's looking for it, man. It's the best way to get retweets. I had Calvin Ridley, wide receiver one, legit wide receiver one, make me freaking turn my notifications off on Twitter because he retweeted one of my videos about him.
You know what we've discovered in NDT?
What's that?
The entire Stanford locker room searches tweets, right? And they also do it, like, for each other. Like, I tweeted something about Justin Reed, safety for Stanford, and then replied to that tweet with a clip of Justin Reed without putting Justin Reed's name in it. Bryce Love liked the reply, right? Bryce Love, not Justin Reed. Yeah. Nothing, right? Harrison Phillips constantly searches his own name. Quentin Meeks constantly searches his own name. The entire Stanford locker room just sits together on their phones finding NFL draft analysts to tweet about it. So if you're hungry for the likes, say some good stuff about like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside or Caden Smith or K.J. Costello and they'll go nuts.
You know what's kind of freaking me out right now? I don't want my mention, like, okay, like my tweet. That's cool. Use it as motivation. Perfect. I could be wrong. I'm an idiot. No
you
issue with that
what?
Whatsoever. Oh, don't quote tweet me and start and screw my mentions up and get FSU Twitter all up in my biz, man. Like, that's just going to ruin my day. Like, you take a risk. As it, you know, people say, oh, you know, you're just a faceless guy behind a computer. I care about what I put out there. You know, I fully research it. I fully believe in what I'm saying. But at the same time, I don't need a bunch of FSU homers all on my mentions going all crazy on me. So I'm hoping Auden Tweet doesn't quote tweet me. Anyway. Ben, we got to get out of here. We got way off track, but this is just some of the stuff that you're going to get from me and Ben in Mobile
preview for
the Senior Bowl. We are going to be there live, kicking it, doing our thing. And remember, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Auden Tate is good. Cut call.